back, pulls up the three, boom, knocks it down. Curry from the corner at three, puts it in.
For overtime, makes it, Garrett, Murray.
Welcome to this edition of the MVP cast. For me, Mark Woods. My guest is a two-time BBL MVP who's here for a second spell back in the league and doing pretty well so far, winning the Player of the Month for October. He's one of the best point guards in the league. And in the week of his 30th birthday, we're really glad to have him on the show. Ramon Fletcher, welcome to the MVP cast.
Thanks for having me, Mark. But, you know, don't remind me that I'm turning 30. I want to go backwards, not forwards.
That was a very nervous laugh. How are you approaching this big milestone?
I'm trying to take it a day at a time. You know, when I was about 20, 21, 30 just seemed so old. It just seemed like everything was downhill after that. But now I'm so close to it. I still kind of feel like I'm 25, 26. So, and I'm going to stick with that.
How did your 20s pan out? How the 19-year-old Ramon Fletcher would have expected them to?
Ooh, that's a tough question. It was tough more mentally than physically, especially, you know, the university, going to university, coming from high school. Everybody on the college team, like, was the main guy on their high school team. So it was kind of a wake-up call when I went to college, just getting an understanding of court space and defensive principles, defensive discipline on and off the court. So, I mean, it was kind of those crucial years where I learned a lot about myself, and it kind of shaped me to the person that I am now. So I think those 19 to 24, 25 before I turned professional were really crucial.
What advice would you give your 19-year-old self?
Patience. Things aren't going to, you know, happen overnight. Things are not going to always happen like you want it. If you have patience and just the confidence to believe that things will turn around at some point, because bad things don't last forever. So I think the biggest thing will be just be patient and stay the course no matter what.
Well, I mean, yeah. you talk about sort of patience and getting through tough times. I mean, your career's gone pretty well since you turned pro, but, you know, what's been that toughest time that you've gone through?
When 2011, when I came out of college, I started my stint in the Netherlands. So I probably arrived late August, I want to say. I arrived in late August, and about 4 or 5 weeks in, my team had went completely bankrupt. So being a rookie, of course you hear horror stories about team making cuts, if you're not good enough, you know, those type of horror stories. But waking up one day, the Wi-Fi suddenly isn't working, you know, kind of things that we take, you know, for granted. And then you show up to practice and there's more cars, you know, in the car park than usual. So something felt a little strange. And then we just had a meeting. They just said, we can't pay you guys. So that was one of the toughest times. So I had to go back home. You know, I stayed there for a couple of days. Then I had to go back home and regroup and try to figure out what was next. And then I end up signing to a different team in the Netherlands in December. So I finished that half of the season, then went the whole year, had a pretty good season. And then after that, I had to sit out an entire year, which people probably heard this story before, but I sat out an entire year because my agent at the time, he kind of was chasing that deal instead of the right deal, you know? So a lot of deals were turned down, a lot of situations that I wasn't even, you know, really in the loop about kind of went over my head. I didn't understand. So I decided I kind of wanted to part ways with him in late October of that year. And I had a 90-day clause in my contract where I couldn't sign with another agent. I couldn't sign with another team until he released me. So instead of, you know, it was since May he's been working and he couldn't find anything then. So instead of just terminating my contract and, you know, just letting me find somebody else that can work for me and stuff like that, because I had other agents that had offers and deals for me, but I couldn't do anything. So instead of him, you know, kind of letting me go and, you know, try something new, he kept me the entire 90 days. So that went until about January, February. and then I was released, and then I signed to a new agent. So by then, nobody wants a 5'9" scorer that hasn't played, you know, all season to just come in February, March, and that's playoff time. So I had to, you know, I had to take that one on the chin and get prepared for the next season, and then that's when I signed with Newcastle. So
I mean, it's the
worked
kind
out pretty well.
It's the kind of story we hear all too often about that, how, you know, players, the agent don't do what they expect them to do. That you guys sit out, and often when a guy sits out a season, they don't come back from that. What did you do during that season to just kind of keep yourself switched on to the idea that you were still a professional player rather than a guy that had a shot, but maybe this was it?
It was, you know, it might sound cliche, but I had, of course, I had my best friends, both of them play overseas now. And then, of course, I had my family, you know, so it was a perfect balance of the tough love from those two guys and then the love that you actually, you know, you get from family. And of course, I still played, I still trained, but it wasn't the same as getting up at 9 a.m, going to practice, lifting, you know, then having a legit structured practice. I played some pickup, did some shooting drills. And then I also worked at Foot Locker for the entire year, House of Hoops.
Really?
So I was kind of around the sport. And it was kind of strange because where I was a pretty popular, you know, area in Kansas City. So people come in and then you have no idea how many times I told this story. Like, oh, my agent, at first it started me, you know, like I just told you, my agent did this, to the point that I said it so much, it got to, oh, I'm just waiting. So, yeah, I worked at Foot Locker, stockroom manager. So
it's a nice alternative career to have if it all goes wrong.
Yeah, you know, I got that in my back pocket. Be around shoes all day.
I mean, Kansas City has a lot of, if I might call them, undersized point guards that have come through. And it was interesting you said you were 5'9", because I've seen you listed higher than that on a few official sources, the old cliche of getting slightly, you know, bigger on the plane or smaller in the plane. But yeah, you've got guys like Ty Lue and Earl Watson, I guess, came through there as well.
Was
that something that maybe give you an aspiration there that you could come through and still make it?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you are small, you have that short man syndrome. You don't believe that you're small. You kind of, you know, you're super competitive. You feel everything is against you. And it kind of works in our favor in a way, you know, as long, you know, as you stay mentally tough and stuff like that. And with Teron, me and Teron talk, we don't talk as like every single day, but I still talk to him. I talk to Earl as well. And Teron was a mentor for me in college because when I was in Green Bay, he was coaching in Milwaukee. So it was pretty close. And then he moved to Boston and then we kind of, you know, stayed in touch. So just like basically the patience thing that I told you was pretty much the advice he gave me, because he is really feisty, really feisty, tough.
How useful is that to have a guy who's played and obviously now is coached at the highest level to kind of be a sounding board?
I think it's just that Kansas City type. It's kind of how we are. It's kind of what we were ingrained in, because the basketball community in the world is really small in general. You know, everybody knows everybody. You know somebody that I might know. So it's kind of a mutual, you know, connection. And then with Kansas City, it's not a really big city, you know, and it's not a huge sports town. So if you are, you know, if you can play a sport or play basketball and you're, you know, you're pretty good, you kind of latch on to people that actually play that sport as well. So that he was one of those things. He was not just my mentor. It's a lot of us that, you know, the little group that we have. And it was just amazing just to hear his horror stories, his, you know, his ups and downs, the trials and stuff like that. And I think, did I see him coaching? I don't know. You know, I just thought he was going to play forever because that's how I looked at him. He's one of those guys that he can be on crutches and I still think he can give somebody 40. You know, like that type of respect. I didn't see coaching, but it turned that way. And I'm, you know, I'm happy for him, of course.
Do you think there's that thing where when you're not expected to make it, or the kind of the odds are almost against you, that it gives you that work ethic that you have to try harder, have to be better, have to beat the next guy out because people don't expect you to succeed?
Yes, and it's that chip. You know, that's what make, you know, some people go over that, you know, over that hump of being like good and then really good. And I think that it's a mentality, of course, and it's something that I've done unconsciously. It's not something that I sit down like, okay, this is my situation. I'm going to do this, and I know everybody's against me. It's just something that happened, something that from day to day, like no matter, I'm super competitive, of course. Like in between the lines, I'm super competitive. See if I could drink water faster than you can, like that type of competitiveness, but it's all in fun, to be honest.
You went to high school at the, and I'm pronouncing this right. I can't even pronounce the word. The Seo Academy of Performing Arts.
Yes.
Now that sounds a bit like the Fame Academy. Was there an audition
Yes.
process to get into it?
Yes. So my entire schooling up to college, I went to a performing arts school. So I went to performing arts elementary school as well, where we had to do music, we had to do dance, we had to do choir, we had to do arts, tech, and stuff like that. And then I went to the middle school, which is was connected to my high school. And so my talent, I play in the orchestra. So I played the stand-up bass for about 7 years. So that's what I had to audition to get in. Yep.
And where's the love of music come from?
Just like on Saturdays, my mom and dad used to just clean up, listen to music all the time. It just always was around. And I like all types of music, of course, and I think that's where it picked up at, honestly.
And was there ever the aspiration to play in an orchestra, go take that kind of route?
It was either orchestra or basketball, and it was one of those things. Basketball was just so easy to get. With orchestra, I would have to buy bass, I would have to find quintets, I would have to find, the symphony around the city, and that is an elite group. And I don't think I was that good,
How
honestly.
much of a part of your life is music now?
Oh, it's when I wake up, I listen to music. When I drive and I listen to music on the way to games. If I'm just bored, I just play something random. It can be some jazz music just to calm me down. It can be some loud music. I haven't gotten into the rock and roll yet,
So
or
you're
the
not
country.
the heavy metal, has its heavy
Yeah, I
tunes.
haven't. Yeah, I know I'm short and I'm kind of like intense, but I don't think I'm into the rock and roll just yet.
You're a big Kansas City guy, and obviously Chiefs are best team in the NFL at the minute. Royals are, big baseball. What's the
Yeah.
other sporting love?
We have a football soccer team, which is Sporting Kansas City. They've been really good, for a while. What else do we have? We have a ABA type semi-pro basketball team that's been there for about, this is probably our second year, the Kansas City Tornadoes. We had hockey and stuff like that, and we're supposed to be next online for NBA teams, us in Seattle. So I feel if we get that'd be huge for our city as a whole. And it's one of those blue collar type cities, hardworking cities. And if you want to start a career or, be an entrepreneur and just, start a life, I think Kansas City is a good spot. Not the best spot. I'm a little biased, but I think it's a solid spot for you.
When you grow up in a city that doesn't have an NBA team, who do you pick as
I'm
your
just a
team?
Laker fan.
That's an
I'm just a
easy
Kobe.
choice. That's an
Yeah,
easy
I
choice.
was just a Kobe fan, to be honest. I was Kobe with the fro. And I liked Allen Iverson just, because his meaning behind the game, how he played the game and stuff like that. But I tell you what, when they played in the finals, that was tough. It's tough to watch. But of course, because Ron was with the Lakers as well, so I kind of latched on to that. So I've just been a Lakers fan.
How do you, I mean, obviously the NBA is on during the night, but are you kind of the sort of guy that gets up early in the morning, watches League Pass, follows it, the
Yes.
box scores?
Yeah. I got the league pass now, and I kind of like, I just watch it back. The Lakers games I watch full. The other games I watch the condensed version. Just give me something in the background while I get started, while I eat, before I go, start my day. But I'm a basketball junkie, of course.
So let me put this
Always.
statement to you. Lonzo Ball, starting point guard in a championship Lakers team, yes or
No.
no?
No.
Simple thought.
No,
Or
he's
Rajon
good,
Rondo.
but I think Rondo being there at some point when the going gets tough, Rondo will be on the court. You know, like you know how it is. Like, it doesn't matter if you start us if you're on at the end. And I don't know if, you know, Zoe is gonna be there like that.
Being American overseas, you look back at the States and you're very connected to your family. You see what's going on socially, politically in America right now.
Yeah.
How does that feel now that you've spent some time overseas? Maybe you get a bit of perspective about how America's perceived, what the politics look like. Does it make it seem even crazier? Does it seem more normal? What's the perception?
It makes it seem more crazier. Because instead of me being in, you know, inside of it, I'm outside looking in. And of course, I'm going to be emotionally attached because it's home. The States is home. But I spend so much time overseas looking at how, you know, things are ran over here, how people are on a day-to-day basis, what's important to them and stuff like that. And it's just, well, why can't it be this simple at home? You know, I know we're the big bad wolf of the world, but it's okay to adjust. Like, times change no matter what. And sometimes it just seems like we need to be the alpha, you know, and instead of buying into some other countries, how they do some things. And it's just crazy because we just had our midterms last week and I did my absentee ballot and I voted, I sent it in and stuff like that. And it's going good. It's going good. It's going better than I expected, which is good because the midterms are important. But to see how many people, you know, kind of came out and actually voted, you'd be surprised how many people I hear say, well, my vote doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they're going to put in office who they want to. And that's kind of an immature way to look at it, especially under the circumstances that we're going through right now. So you'd rather just give in instead of actually trying to make a change. Yeah, one vote is not going to flip everything, but if a million people say the same exact thing, that adds up. So.
Because I hope I'm recalling this correctly, Missouri was one of the few states where a Republican ousted a Democrat in the Senate.
We are a red state for sure.
Is that sort of surprising? Because it's, you know, you see a little bit of the movement. I guess we perceive it as a movement against Trump, and yet you're coming from a state that it's gone the other way. Do you sit back and go, how does this happen?
It's one of those things that it's happened. It's been a Republican for so long, and families are, you know, part of Republican. They just pass it down and down because that's all you know. So when it comes to that, it's kind of hard to flip a state to become Democrat, you know, and it's not a huge margin. It's probably like 53-47. But in that type of setting with a, you know, Democrat, that's a huge percentage. It's a huge percentage.
How much do you guys talk politics within, you know, within the team, or even you have teams, players on other teams that you come across? Does it come up much?
I think not as much. I think when the most that's was talked about was when Trump actually looked like he had a chance. And I think that was one of the biggest, you know, biggest things when it came to politics, that everybody was involved worldwide. But we don't talk too much about politics, you know.
You came back this summer from playing in Slovakia or at Košice last season, and we spoke at the start of the year at a game, and you said to me that the thing for you, what was important, was the quality of place and the environment you were in. What sum up that experience last season?
It was different. It wasn't as intense. But the scheduling was kind of different than what I was used to, which I can deal with. I have no problem with that. But I wasn't a huge, huge fan of my coach. You know, I wasn't a huge fan of like how he kind of talked. You know, he was great X's and O's person. He knew basketball. He lived, breathed basketball. But when it comes to dealing with professionals, you have to be able to connect with the players because we have things going on off the court. You know, we have our own situations, our families, and it's not basketball all the time. And that's kind of what we need. We need to escape. So I think that kind of was a, you know, a tug of war with everybody on the team. As far as the basketball, as far as our team, we were really, really good. The quality of basketball was really good. The league was pretty good as well, you know, from top to bottom, as far as the standard of understanding basketball and things like that. But I think the culture was different than what I was used to. It was really quiet. I spent most of my time just, you know, inside the house and everything. So I think it was more of being kind of uncomfortable.
Is that tougher? Because obviously you start out in the Netherlands where everybody speaks better English than we do.
Yes.
And then you come back to Newcastle where they speak a variety of English. And then you go to a country where they don't really speak much English. I mean, is that the tricky part that you deal with the day-to-day just existence?
I think that's the tricky part, because you can't just go to the, you know, supermarket and say, hey, do you have this? It's a lot of using your hands. It's a lot of, you know, kind of slowing down your speech. And as time is, you know, you try to figure it out, you know, Google Translate, I use that a ton. You know, even in our group, our team group messaging, there was times where they spoke English, but the majority of the time they go have a back and forth in, you know, in Slovakian, which was kind of, it was kind of hard. It was kind of different, you know, especially like me being the type of person, I like to be, you know, in the loop, involved in things like that, you know, just to have a better relationship. But yeah, I think that's the language barrier is one of those things that's tough that Americans kind of struggle with, that I don't have a huge problem with it anymore because I've been part of it. But if you talk to anybody, I think that's a huge thing. So to the point it was so bad, I was wondering why just everybody just doesn't speak English. That would make the world so much easier.
You get to the end of the season, you think, right, I don't want to do this again. Who calls who? You call Fab, Fab calls you. How does it work?
I talked to Fab throughout the entire season. It wasn't, and most of it wasn't about basketball at all. It's just, you know, us just basically just checking in, because like anybody that know us know our relationship is not just player coach. So, you know, some games I'll watch and some games I'll see the result, and I automatically knew what mindset he probably was in. So just to check in, you know, me and D and Drew are really close as well. So I kind of was still in the loop about it, and I came up about November to visit and I saw Fab, but every time I came up was the Eurobasket break. Mm. So D and Drew was going it with Commonwealth. So I wasn't able to see them. I saw Fab a couple times and I ran into Paul as well. We had a little chat, but it wasn't anything about me coming back, you know, just checking in how things were. I think about, because Fab was with the Raptors in the summer league, you know, his situation. And I was just home. So I want to say about June, July, the talk starts to really like, oh, okay, this can happen. It could be a return, you know, especially with a new arena coming up and Leicester going to, you know, Europe. It was a chance to take that next step. And I kind of wanted to be a part of that. And my decision, it was either do I wait for Europe to come get me, or try to get, you know, go to Europe with Newcastle.
Do you think, I mean, that relationship you have with Fab, how much of that is helped by the fact that he's a player coach, so you guys are kind of in battle out in the court together? Or
right,
how does that have that different to the relationship that you might build with just someone who's a regular head coach on the sidelines?
Yeah, it has a lot to do with it. You know, my first year, everybody's first year in Newcastle, they say, oh, wow, we had a player coach. How is this going to work? It's a lot easier than people expect it, because he doesn't feel, I always need to be on the court. I always need to play. If it was up to him, he would play spare minutes, you know, do what we need, but he's not trying to go out and play 40. And that's kind of what people, like, you know, when they first come, don't understand about it. And I think it's his personality and his demeanor and approach to the game that I respect so much, you know, because he has to go through, he does everything we do. He does all the lifting sessions, the running sessions, he in charge of the film. He watches as a player. He watches as a coach. He practices, you know, it's not days he come in and say, oh, I'm the coach. I'm not practicing today. And that's kind of respecting, especially at 45. getting up and practicing with us. You know, it's that type of respect that I got for him, and it built year after year, day by day. And I think that's one of the most important things when it comes to him.
He's always put this mantra out that when he finishes playing, he'll not coach. And everyone's kind of sure, well, I don't believe you that. Or some people right. think, okay, fair enough. Mm. You know, how would you call that? Do you see that transition for him to just being a coach?
I'm not sure. I know he always says it, and he doesn't say anything he doesn't mean or he believes. And I think right now his mind is activated in basketball. And it's kind of hard to get out of that mode and try to jump into, oh, I'm just going to be a coach, especially when he's been a player coach for so long. And this has been his identity and for years. So I can see where he's going with that. Can he make, I think he can make a good coach, honestly, if he doesn't play, because he could just strictly focus on this. And he has the experience of actually playing as well. So I don't know. I hear him. I think I'm in the same boat as everybody else.
It's just the idea, I think, of seeing him in a suit. That's the thing that I struggle to get my head around.
I've seen him in a suit. He has a suit that has fabulous in the inside. Like, kind of stitched. It's a really nice suit. It's a really nice suit. So I wonder if he'll pull that out. If he'll put Coach Flournoy in it.
If you put your money on it, is he retiring this season?
I don't think I'll be able to answer that. I'm not sure. I can't. He's 45, Mark. I can't. Because I would have said that about 15 years ago, and I would have lost all my money. I'm not sure.
To be honest. You talk about things in the States. I know you're a big barbecue guy. So what do you do here to replicate that kind of cuisine that you miss back home?
You can't. I've accepted it that you can't. That's what I did. I just accepted that you can't. You know, it is what it is. So I just wait for barbecue till I go home.
So you don't sort of, for Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving is coming up, you don't sort of plan something like you're getting, you find your ribs and you find a barbecue and all that kind of stuff?
Nah. I'm going to try to get a care package of barbecue sent here this year, something different.
You're not one of those competitive barbecue people, are you? Because I've seen those mistakes.
No. I just like to try it. I'm not a good barbecue cooker. But I like to try. I like to taste it for sure. You can cook it and I'll just taste yours. I'll let you know if it's good or not.
Who's your barbecue go-to person for cooking?
Oh, my uncle. My uncle was really, really good, but he passed away. But he was one of those competitors. I didn't know if he had anybody that actually he competed with, maybe himself, but I thought he was really good. Yeah.
For those people,
I think it's just about the seasoning and the sauce, you know. So.
For those people listening who think this is crazy, there is actually a competitive barbecue circuit in America with judges who go around rating people in competitions. You cannot make this up, but it's absolutely true.
Really?
It's quite extraordinary. A friend of mine who emigrated from Glasgow to New York is now a qualified, certified judge. And I think it's one of the most extraordinary part-time careers that you could possibly have. But there you go.
Yeah, well, when you talk to them, when I'm done with basketball, I can go to Foot Locker. And I can judge barbecue. I think that's a good setup for me. Perfect career for me.
Talking of competition, you guys at Newcastle started 6-2, mm-hmm. a beaten start, then two losses in a weekend. What's the vibe amongst the team at the moment?
I think, you know, that Leicester, Bristol, back to back, it was Leicester is such, it's one of those games, you know, like no matter what, Newcastle can be 0-6 going into that game. Leicester can be 0-6 going into that game, but it feels like a cup final. So that it was kind of emotional, you know, our first game of the season. It was earlier than I've played Leicester because we usually don't play them until late December since I've been here. So it's kind of both teams were still trying to find ourselves and stuff like that. So, you know, it's basketball, you know, it's the roller coaster of basketball, the ups and downs, and you know, it's about not going on a skid and not letting two games, because the only thing those games meant to us was we weren't going undefeated for the season. It didn't win anything. It didn't lose anything. I think team morale is back to what it was. And anybody that says, oh, nothing happened, we don't feel no type of way, when it comes to big games like that, then you're not talking to a competitor, So it's going to take a hit, it's going to take a hit because a loss is a loss. So it's just a bounce back. And I think we've, even though Friday against Worcester probably wasn't the best basketball people wanted to see, but sometimes you have to win ugly. You're going to win ugly.
Tell me about that trip to Worcester. It was quite an ending to the night for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it started off well. It started off well. We went on a run and stuff like that. But every team is going to have a run. I know basketball probably more than I know basketball. So the game is about runs. And Worcester is a pretty good team. I think their offense was really, really solid. It's just surprising that their record is that. So it's just respect to them. And then the third quarter, I kind of went down with, my little hamstring situation. So, but we pulled out the win regardless. And that's all I care about.
I mean, looking ahead to the rest of this season, and Fab's always kind of talked about the last couple of years, the team getting to second half, maybe getting after Christmas, occasionally getting after the BBL Cup final, and then not being able to make adjustments. The team kind of goes backwards. How do you guys kind of plan the season as the point guard for the team? How do you look ahead and say, right, this is the team we are now, this is where we'd like to be by May?
Yeah, it's one of those things that you always want to be better towards the end. I'd rather be better towards the end of the season than in top form at the beginning, because we want to win the cup, we want to win the trophy, and that's when teams' rotations, their style of play are pretty much set. So if you look after January, February, of course, there's not a lot of changes when it comes to rosters unless something crazy happens. So everybody is pretty much set with their rotation, set with their play call, set with the way they want to play defense and stuff like that. So if you get in peak form around February, March, April, going into the playoffs, that's way better than hitting the ground running, and I think that's where we want to be. We just want to be the best possible version of who we are. We don't want to duplicate anybody. We don't want to be any other team or try to play a style of basketball that doesn't suit us. And that's when you get in trouble. And I think with this team, we have a group of guys that experienced, and understands that and understands the wear and tear of the BBL season. Yeah, it's not 82 like, say, the NBA, but it's still a long season, So nothing really makes or break around this time. And it's kind of hard, because losses are losses, wins are wins. You're going to take that however, no matter what, part of the year. But as a team, I think we want to play our best basketball as, the playoffs come around, the cup trophy and stuff like that. But we just want to be better.
You've been down to the new arena. I mean, it's nearly ready now. I mean, how exciting is that coming up, the fact you guys will play out this campaign in this brand new purpose-built building?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe. I've been here for about 4 years, and, we've talked about it, of course. And I think it won't hit me until I actually walk inside, because I drive past it, I see it, and it's still like, oh, that's our arena. it's that type of thing. And I don't think it's going to hit everybody until we play our first game there. That's when it's all the emotions and everything, kind of set in. I'm really looking forward to it.
The next game's on Friday against Cheshire Phoenix. That is the big 3-0 for you. You got a game that night, but how are you going to celebrate this milestone?
Nah, I'm not. After 21, you stop celebrating.
No, you don't.
You start regretting things. You start thinking about where you want to be in your life. I'm too young to have a midlife crisis, Mark. I don't want 30 to be it. But no, I'm just, it's just going to be, it's a game day. So that's, I love that as well. So I've never played on my birthday, honestly.
This is the first in many respects.
This is a first, yeah. It's a first. So first time playing on my birthday and the big 30-30.
Maybe there'll be a custom-made suit with Ramon lined in the inside from Fab's tailor.
Oh, I thought you were going to get that.
Well, that could be my next milestone birthday, but I'm not going to look that far ahead right now.
Well, I'm happy. So,
well,
happy I made it this far.
Well, we wish you a belated or a premature happy birthday, and hope your 30th goes well, and the rest of the season. Ron Fletcher, it's been really brilliant having the MVP cast.
Thanks,
and
Mark.
Good luck for the rest of the season.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, that's it for this edition of the MVP cast. We're available to listen on iTunes, on Stitcher, or on Spotify, or on your smart devices via TuneIn Radio, or you can stream us via MVP247.com. Just click on the podcast page. You can also pick up our recent chats with the likes of Dante Nicholas and Gavin Love. A new edition of the MVP cast coming soon. But for now, for me, Mark Woods, it's goodbye.